Welcome to Local Talk concerning our COVID-19 response on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people's stories and events in Central Iowa. Good to get together again to provide facts to our community through word of mouth and Zoom technology. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarb. I'm your host for the hour with good friend and neighbor Mike Metz. Hey, Mike.
Hello, Pat. Hello, everyone.
Great to have you with us. And Anna Magnuson, a.k.a. Anna Banana.
Hey, everyone. Anna.
Hello. Today through Zoom, we will be joined by Susan Benner with the Immigration Fund and Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, with Mary Rankin and Bill Schmidt with the Recycling Recovery Plant. He's the superintendent there. And because we are the heart of Iowa, Anna Banana is here with her heart-to-heart messages from KHOI. Hi, Anna.
Hello, everyone. Hi. Happy Friday.
Yeah, hi again. Hey, let's talk about the auction at khoyfm.org website. I understand you've contributed a heart-to-heart basket.
I did. It's filled with love. It's got chocolate. What can you not love about chocolate? Amaretto decaf coffee. And love that are meant to be shared with a friend or just yourself. You can indulge your sweet tooth with the kisses and milk chocolate bar already provided, and then head to Chocolaterie Stomp to replenish your stash using the $20 gift card. You can top this off with a couple of heartwarming reads that will help you focus on the joy of the holiday season. And I get to come to the station, so sometimes I'm eating that chocolate, but I will replenish it before you win it.
Oh, there it is. There's a good advertisement. It must be good stuff. Thank you, Anna.
Of course.
Well, and go to that website, khoyfm.org, and find the auction button and peruse through the – there's fantastic items from – jewelry to a lot of baskets, a lot of books, a lot of good things, a lot of Christmas shopping ideas, and a lot of the local community establishments, a lot of the businesses have contributed to this. So it keeps everything local. And Mike Metz is just nodding like crazy. I can see him on Zoom.
Do you want me to make a comment?
Sure.
Well, like Anna, I'm going to have to take out a second mortgage because I was perusing the list yesterday and I hit the auction button more than once. go ahead.
You're in the Christmas spirit, the giving spirit.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I don't know if you've got time. I can describe later a little bit about the money.
Let's do that. Let's hold off on that. I know you got some great stuffs also. The weather forecast has a change occurring today. It's been beautiful, yet it is Iowa, and it is December, and the wind will return with a little rain today as a cool front. A high of 38 is forecast with rain turning to snow tonight. And once the snow moves through tomorrow, there will be highs in the 30s and lows in the teens and low 20s at night. So there is no more precipitation forecast for next week at this time. But now let's welcome Dennis Hart, a master at gathering the news for this week from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
The coronavirus and everything that goes along with it continued to dominate the news in the Ames Tribune last week, as it has for almost a year now. Let's start with last Friday's paper, which reported that 72 more people in Story County had been confirmed to have the virus. That brought to 6,984 the number of people in the county who had been infected. Story County's 14-day positivity rate was said to be 10.4%. The Trib also reported that the Ames School Board had decided to move students in the district out of their fully online learning model to a hybrid model starting this past Wednesday. Board member Ellen Bierbaum told other board members he had received emails from teachers who were surprised by the recommendation to move into the hybrid model after the district had gained state approval to continue fully online until December 14th. Earlier in the week, the school district's equity committee discussed the role of school resource officers. Those are law enforcement officers who are in a community-oriented policing assignment to work with one or more schools. Starting next month, the committee will start preparing recommendations to give to the school board. Board member Monique Binken, who is also a member of the equity committee, said the district should not have officers in schools. She said mixing law enforcement and education leads to students feeling disconnected from school and less safe. And last Friday's paper also reported on Christmas tree farms in Story County. There's one in Cambridge, the Stroutman Tree Farm. There's one in Maxwell, called simply enough the Christmas Tree Farm. And there's one in Roland, known as the Kris Kringle Christmas Tree Farm. And one that is usually open in Boone, the Enchanted Valley Tree Farm, will not be open this year because of the coronavirus. Saturday's paper reported that another person had died from the coronavirus in Story County. That brought to 24 the number of people who had died from the virus, but that number would change again in a few days. In addition, 49 more people in the county were infected with the virus. That meant more than 7,000 people in the county had been infected with the coronavirus since the pandemic began, 7,033 to be exact. The county's 14-day positivity rate was said to be 10%. There was also word that an early morning fire on Friday had caused heavy damage to a warehouse in Ames. The fire took place at 701 Dayton Avenue. Part of the warehouse roof collapsed during the fire, which limited firefighters' access to the burning building. Half the building sustained heavy damage. No injuries were reported. Total estimated damage was set at $7,000. And last Saturday's paper had a feature story about what life was like for Iowa State University women's basketball coach Bill Finley while he was quarantined after he came into contact with someone who had tested positive for the coronavirus. Finley missed his team's first two games of the season, but he was cleared to resume coaching the team in person a week ago Wednesday when the Cyclones opened Big 12 league play against TCU in Fort Worth, Texas. Finley is in his 26th season coaching the Cyclones, and he had never missed a game until the coronavirus pandemic. Sunday's paper brought word that the city of Ames was accepting applications to add sculptures to neighborhoods. The Ames Public Art Commission launched the Neighborhood Sculpture Program to continue what it called a visual and aesthetic environment that incorporates art into the lives of all Ames citizens. Residents have until December 18th to apply for the city to add sculpture to their neighborhood at no cost to them. The city requires the artwork to be displayed in a public area accessible to everyone, including a neighborhood entrance, park, or cul-de-sac. There was also word that the Ames Alternative Gift Market would help people for the 30th holiday season. An alternative gift is one given to a charitable organization in honor of a loved one. Participants can give to both local and international groups. The Ames chapter started 3 decades ago at the Collegiate Presbyterian Church and has since expanded to 6 other churches. Those who don't go to one of the churches can take part at the Weedsfield Cooperative Grocery on Northwestern Avenue in Ames. There was also a report on how the Erickson Public Library in Boone had looked for ways to offer services during the coronavirus pandemic. The library closed for about 6 weeks in mid-March. Afterward, the library board and staff members came up with plans to keep some programs going virtually, including story time via Facebook Live and events via Zoom. Patrons can now visit the library in person, keeping socially distant and with masks suggested. And of course, the story, make that stories, that dominated the Trib sports pages last Sunday involved Iowa State University's football team. The Cyclones defeated West Virginia 42-6 at Jack Trice Stadium to finish in first place in the Big 12 Conference. The Cyclones will play in the Big 12's championship game for the first time on December 19th. Tuesday's Trib reported that another person had died from the coronavirus in Story County. That brought to 25 the number of people in the county who had died from the virus. In addition, the Trib reported that another 108 people had tested positive for the virus. That brought the total number of county residents who had tested positive to 7,141 since the pandemic began. The county's 14-day positivity rate was said to be 9.9%. There was also word about the latest coronavirus cases in Story County school districts. The Ames School District reported fewer than 6 positive cases among students at the preschool, the elementary buildings, and at Ames High. At the middle school, no confirmed cases were reported. In the Roland Story School District, 13 students were said to have tested positive. In the Ballard School District, fewer than 6 students were reported to have the virus. In Gilbert, 6 students were reported to have it, while in Nevada, that school district reported 2 high school students had tested positive. And the Trib reported that President Trump had awarded Iowa wrestling icon Dan Gable the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest civilian honor, in a ceremony inside the Oval Office. Gable is the first wrestler to receive that honor. He won 3 state championships for Waterloo West and 2 NCAA titles for Iowa State University. He won a gold medal at the 1972 Olympics, then became wrestling coach at the University of Iowa, where his program there won 21 straight Big Ten championships. President Trump called Gable the greatest of all time in wrestling. Wednesday's paper reported that another 35 cases of the coronavirus had been confirmed in Story County, bringing the total number of cases to 7,176. The county's 14-day positivity rate was said to be 10.5%. And there was also word that after the state of Iowa adopted a new way of calculating people who had died from the virus, Story County's death toll had dropped from 25 to 18. But across the state, the number of deaths from the virus went up when the new calculations were applied. There was also word that students in the Ames School District would start a hybrid learning model this past Wednesday, in which they would learn both virtually and in a classroom leading up to the start of winter break on December 15th. All students have been learning in a fully online model, but those students who decided to learn completely online earlier this year will continue to do so. 35% of students fall into that category. The Trib also reported that the Story County Board of Supervisors had passed a septic tank ordinance that would require routine pumping. The ordinance includes limits to shared septic tanks and requires soil protection. Septic tank owners will have to pump them every 5 years, which can cost anywhere from $260 to $400. The county has more than 3,000 active permitted septic tank systems, and about 900 rural properties do not have a septic tank permit. The vote to pass the ordinance was 2-1, with Supervisor Lisa Heddens opposed. There was more Wednesday, including word that the Iowa Youth Ballet is planning to perform a holiday show called Sugar Plum Celebration this Sunday at Stevens Auditorium in Ames. There will be two showtimes at 1 and 6 o'clock. The number of people in the audience will be limited because of the coronavirus pandemic. And there was word that Iowa State University's football team was ranked number 7 in the college football playoff rankings. That's the highest a Cyclones football team has ever been ranked. Yesterday's paper brought word that another person had died from the coronavirus in Story County, bringing to 19 the number of deaths in the county from the virus. And 63 more people were confirmed to have the virus, bringing to 7,239 the number of people in the county infected since the pandemic started. The county's 14-day positivity rate was said to be 11.3%. The Trib also had word that 45 new coronavirus cases were reported last week at Iowa State University. That includes 28 students and 17 faculty and staff members. That brought the total number of students, faculty, and staff members who had tested positive for the virus to 2,309 since August 1st. There was also word that Boone High School students were moved into a hybrid learning model on Wednesday after a spike in coronavirus cases at the high school. The school board said that hybrid model would last only 2 days, after which students would go into a full remote learning model until December 22nd. The school board president said social gatherings over Thanksgiving had led to the spike in virus cases. Across the district, 35 students were said to have tested positive. All this as Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds announced she would extend the state's mask requirements and limitations on some indoor and outdoor gatherings until next Wednesday. The Trib also reported that the Ames City Council had heard about how the coronavirus had affected city revenue. Revenue from parking fees and hotel and motel taxes went down, while sales tax revenue was stronger than expected. The Parks and Recreation Department did not hire the usual seasonal staff, and some departments like SciRide made up for the pandemic's effect on their budgets with money from the Federal CARES Act. The council also decided to wait for more information after talking about adding 4 new cameras to the campus town area. A city report showed that several incidents, including fights and assaults, have occurred in the area where cameras would have been useful to police. And there was word that Come and Go planned to open a new store in Campus Town yesterday. It's part of a new series of walk-up marketplaces for the convenience chain. This one has no fuel pumps and no parking lot, but it offers a big selection of healthy food in addition to the usual array of pop, candy, and donuts. And that is your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, and for some reason, I'm feeling hungry right now. But I'll overcome that and plan to stay safe and healthy this coming weekend so that I can return to this same virtual seat on Monday when I'll report on what's been making news around Iowa. I hope you have a great weekend.
Love is but a song we sing. Fear's the way we die. We can make the mountains ring or make the angels cry. Though the bird is on the wing, we may not know why. Come on, people now, smile on your brother. Everybody get together, try to love one another right now.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, for the Week in the News with a music interlude, Get Together, an old Youngbloods tune performed here by Lowell Levenger, a.k.a. Banana. And we're going to be focusing on immigrants at this portion of the show. And I wanted to bring up another auction item contributed by our board chair, Lynn Carey. And her World Peace Basket is to promote world peace with this delightful fair trade basket filled with many yummy treats. Unique items included are a cloth basket from Baghdad, Social Justice Dark Chocolate Dis, a peace coffee, Thai curry cashews, Equal Exchange Dark Chocolate with Orange, Divine Dark Chocolate with Toffee and Sea Salt, and a Nepali bag with mini chocolate bars. So there is something at the KHOIFM.org auction house. And in the interest of world peace, taking care of our immigration friends, let's welcome Susan Benner with the Immigration Fund. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you.
And I understand, let's start with the title, Immigration Fund. You're actually having a larger
picture. The title of the fund is the COVID-19 Emergency Fund for Story County Immigrants. We frequently refer to it as the Immigrant Fund, but our official title is long. And as it indicates, we work specifically with immigrants in the Story County.
Okay. Are you the first stop, generally, for someone that's looking to reside here in Story County?
No, we were set up specifically for the COVID emergency. So we're working with people, most of whom have lived here for quite some time, actually, in the area. And we are trying to get people through a time when many of them have lost their jobs or their hours have been cut back drastically, and they're just really struggling to meet their very basic needs of having a roof over their head and survival. We basically started putting this together in March when the COVID emergency started to hit badly. I think April 1st was somewhere around there, but I think it was actually April 1st we made our first allocations to families. And we're almost entirely a volunteer-based organization. So some of the people who we work with, we're a huge collaboration of all the volunteers that work with the fund and then people from different agencies and social service programs in the area. So although some of those people are getting paid a salary for the job they do, the work they're doing for us is really above and beyond their normal work. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty much all volunteer, and we raise all of our funds through donations. Everything is through donations and grants. We have been able to get some grants, which has been wonderful. And we just keep the surrounding community has been incredibly generous. When we started, we thought, you know, a few months and things would settle down and people would be able to go back to work. And now we're all realizing this is going to last a whole lot longer than we expected. It's already lasted longer, and it's going to be quite some time before people really have opportunities for work again. So it's been a struggle. We've had times when we've really dipped down close to all of our funding and had next to nothing, you know, really scraping the barrel. And then somehow, you know, money starts coming in again. So we've survived. And we've also collaborated with Good Neighbor Emergency Assistance, the Salvation Army, St. Thomas, the Church of St. Thomas that has a Love Your Neighbor Fund, MICA, which got CARES funding. We're working some with the Bridge Home, which is what used to be the Emergency Residency Project, and they have some funding. So we're able to collaborate with other groups to help us, to help all of us really spread our resources in the most effective and efficient way among the different immigrants. And then St. Cecilia Church, we're really a partnership with a lot of faith organizations. A lot of our funding comes from faith organizations. And St. Cecilia, which has long, has this very long, deep tie to the immigrant community, particularly the Latino community, for many years had the Spanish language mass and have done a lot of outreach and work with the Latino community. And they've just been wonderful. And their staff, their business office and their staff does all of our, you know, financial administrative work out of the goodness of their hearts, and they serve as our 501c3 sponsor. So they've just been wonderful. They really stepped up to take on a big part of it on top of all of their regular work. So they do all the financial stuff.
Well, Ms. Benner, you mentioned volunteers. Why don't we go ahead and list your website for people that want to learn more? But and then I'll include it in the program synopsis. But if you're finding this conversation appealing and have immigrant status and want to learn more, where would that individual go to?
I can tell you if you want to donate, I can tell you where to go to do how to do that. There are two ways to donate, and one of them is through just a check, the old-fashioned way, and you make that check. As I said, St. Cecilia does our financial administrative work, so they make the check out to St. Cecilia Church, and you put in the memo line, you'd want to put that it's for the Immigrant Emergency Fund.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And then send it to St. Cecilia Church, St. Cecilia Church Attention COVID-19 Fund for Immigrants, 2900 Hoover Avenue, that's Ames, 50010. You could also donate via GoFundMe, and if you just could put GoFundMe in Story County Immigrant County Emergency Fund for Immigrants or COVID-19 Emergency Fund for Immigrants, you'll find it there pretty easily.
Well, and then let's talk about your volunteers. Are they are they potential sponsors of an immigrant family, or what would a role of a volunteer be?
What the volunteers do is work basically kind of as caseworkers. Some of us work as caseworkers with the households that we've been helping. We get in touch with us if they're new. We help them get an application done. We keep track of how they're doing and get their information ready. We meet once a week on the phone for the allocation committee to decide who gets what, you know, what allocations we make for that period of time. Then the caseworkers get in touch with the families and let them know. They touch base with them regularly about their needs. We've had families that have had COVID-19, so I've done things like, you know, drop off food and supplies to families who can't get out and go shopping while they're quarantining. Other volunteers are people who have connections to other agencies, you know, some of those agencies I mentioned before, and they do add in extra funding from what we can put in. We have Nancy Heidemann, who is our wonderful, fearless coordinator and leader of keeping the group together as we, our allocations committee, coordinated and organized. And she organizes our information, spends hours and hours keeping everything organized and all clear and easy to get to.
And you mentioned an allocation. What would the allocations, does it vary with immigrant needs or?
It varies with needs up to, we at the moment have a limit of $500 per month per household. If their need goes beyond that, we try to connect with other agencies that may be able to add more in. So, and sometimes it's less. Sometimes we have the how much people pay for rent varies pretty drastically depending on where they live and, you know, if they have children and things like that.
I'm sure it would. I didn't hear any nutritional needs. You know, it just seems like the longer COVID-19 persists, the more need for food seems to be amping up. And apparently your organization assists with getting immigrants in touch with how to address their food needs?
Absolutely, yeah. So we have a whole lot of information about all the different food banks and different organizations and programs that can provide food for people who need it. And we get people hooked up with that. If the Good Neighbor Emergency Assistance provides food vouchers for people, we can get them hooked up with that. We can give them information about all the different food banks and pantries in the area and their hours. So we've got all of that information, and we can pass that on to people if that's among their needs.
Well, it sure sounds like you're providing an incredibly key role to any family that's relocating to Ames. Is there anything I've overlooked, or is there anything, any parting words you'd like to leave with us?
Well, it's a big, I don't think people always understand how large the immigrant community is in Ames, for example, because so many people kind of live on the outskirts of the town and aren't always visible unless they're up on your roof, putting on a new roof, or being maids in a in a hotel you visit. But we have quite a large community, and they're really, really struggling. We have worked with 101 households so far to try to keep them afloat through this. And they're just, you know, these are people who are incredibly hardworking. Mm-hmm. They don't want to use our assistance. As soon as they're able to get enough hours to pay their rent, then they do it. And they say, no, you know, okay, we think we got it this month. And they're extremely grateful for the help. We've had notes from people who have told us just how much it has meant to them to get this kind of support, and we just hope we can keep doing it until the economy gets back on its feet and people have jobs again.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Susan Benner, with the Immigrant Fund, doing a lot of good work here in Ames, Iowa. Thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you.
And so let's have a little music break, and we'll be right back.
Come on, people, now, smile on your brother.
Everybody get together, try to love one another right now. Let's just try one more. That sounded good. Come on, people, now. Smile on your brother. Yeah. Everybody get together. Try to love one another right now. Right now. Right now. Thank you, folks.
You're listening to KHOI Community Radio on Local Talk, our COVID-19 response, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum. And I'm also here with Mike Metz. Mike, I understand you have contributed to the KHOIFM.org auction house.
Yes, Pat, I have. And it's an indirect contribution because it's really the honeybees that I take care of that made the contribution. And you know, people say, well, it's just a bottle of honey. But, you know, a honeybee will visit 50 to 100 flowers on one trip, and they make up to a dozen trips a day. And those could be miles, not just locally. And as you know, I've got a prairie. So
yeah, it's prairie honey.
I can definitely take advantage of that a little bit, still share some for all of the other native bees and pollinators we have out there. But what I would like to say to folks is that ideally, what you need to do with our auction items is you need to find somebody like Anna Banana, who just puts her love and a little honey in her banana bread. So you're munching on bananas, some of the free trade chocolate, and spying through Paul Nelson's telescope, watching neighbors also enjoy baskets from KHOI. So I would say just join in, keep a community by it. Connecting all these different community presents that are out there for us to bid on.
And Anna Banana is nodding. You must be touching her heart.
Well, I just delivered the banana bread, and the secret ingredient is Mike Metz's honey.
Well, there you have it. Yeah, connect the dots. There are a lot of wonderful items at the KHOIFM.org auction house. That auction is going to wrap up December 17th. That next Thursday. So let's stay on top of it, folks. And let's welcome, in our quest to strengthen community through communication, Susan Guiasta is here with us, and Mary Rankin.
Hello. Good to talk to everybody.
It's great to see you, Susan. Do you have any announcements before we get going here?
I've gotten all of them out this week. I really would like your listeners to pay attention this weekend. We could get our first significant snowfall. Yeah. And it's been a while since we've had to use those winter driving skills. Those first few snowfalls are always really challenging for drivers to remember to slow down. It's probably the number one warning that we can give to drivers is you need to slow down. People are underestimating the amount of time needed to stop and to maintain control of their vehicle. So yeah, Slowing down is the best thing they can do.
And be aware of the parking restrictions on some of these key routes.
If we have a snow ordinance, that's certainly something to pay attention to. So, good always. Reminder.
Yeah. Oh, hi, Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director. Hi. And Mr. Schmidt is here, our Resource Recovery Superintendent. Glad to have you with us.
We were hoping that Bill would start out with, we're kind of doing a public service announcement because we've had a couple of questions recently about disposal of American flags.
Yeah.
Sure. I'd be glad to.
Thank you.
We do a lot of programs here, and it's hard to get all the word out about them. So I'm glad to be here this morning to talk about it a little bit. We do have a program. It started about 8 years ago because some of our employees were noticing that we're getting American flags in with the garbage. And they were wanting to make sure that they were treated properly and disposed of, retired the way that they should be. So we started a program where we would collect flags. We allow people to bring them in, drop them off. We have a receptacle that they can put them in. We then work with several different organizations, one of them being the American Legion, to make sure that they run them through a retirement program to make sure that they are retired respectfully with the way that they should be. Worked in the past with American Legion During the 4th of July parade, we've taken our receptacle uptown and put it outside of their facility so they could get the word out to people that if they had a flag that needed to be retired and they were at the 4th of July parade, that's where they could do it at. And mm-hmm. we just want to make sure people know that we're here to help them get rid of properly disposed of items.
Yeah, properly taking care of and honoring the flag at all junctures. I know maybe many people weren't as fortunate as Mike Metz and myself, and we had some Boy Scout training, and it was really, really prominent there. And quite often, it was the American Legion, of course, that would come and help us with those workshops. And there was a real conversation occurring on how to treat the flag, and unfortunately, it seemed like in the modern era, that kind of gets overlooked. Like you say, people are done with it and throw it away. Well, it's really better to have a private, do it in such a manner that the flag is honored and essentially held in some sort of privacy and not just cast aside. This is really a great program.
I was just going to say, I think it's important to note that while Bill and his team are collecting the flags, again, they're not doing the disposal. He mentioned several mm-hmm. times the proper retirement of the flags. So we want to make it crystal clear that Resource Recovery is the repository, but they're not handling disposal.
Right.
But they are handing it over to the appropriate organizations. And I think that might be confusing or concerning to people that they would bring their flag to Resource Recovery. It's not going to show up in the trash. Absolutely not.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, that's exactly actually the point I was trying to make. And I don't know, it's just a bit of a sidelight. Growing up, the flag was not to be used as clothing or apparel. And in the modern times, you sure see that kind of diminishing. But yet, as our culture evolves, I think it basically just anchored on the side of a flag is not to just be cast aside and thrown away.
Correct. Yeah, we'll gladly take them at no charge. We collect, as we say, we collect mm-hmm. them and make sure that they get retired properly. We also work with the 40 and 8 organization. It's similar to the American Legion. It harkens back to World War I, where they had boxcars and they had stenciled on the side of them 40/8. It meant that they could haul 40 troops or 8 horses through the front. So there's a lot of history involved with it, and we're more than happy to be just part of the small part of that wheel, making sure that things get taken care of properly.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for that, Mr. Schmidt.
Certainly.
So we just had a great pumpkin with the enjoyment of pumpkins, but let's talk about pumpkins next. Where could the Resource Recovery be the destination for all the pumpkins that are
Certainly.
Making pies and things?
We started the program several years ago because we were seeing, once again, pumpkins, fall decorations come in. And as you can imagine, by the time they've been carved and set outside for weeks or months, they're not in very good shape by the time we get them. They don't make a good fuel for the power plant. We can't generate electricity with them. So the vast majority of them actually go directly to the landfill. And when they get put in a landfill, that's organic material. It breaks down and it creates methane. The methane is released then into the atmosphere, and the methane is 4 times more harmful to the atmosphere than carbon is. So we started a program where we could have a spot where people could drop off their pumpkins. We then work with our yard waste vendor, GreenRU, and they take those, they grind them up with the yard waste, and they make compost out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Once again, we reduce the amount of methane that's generated, and we put it into good beneficial reuse. This year has gone fantastic. We're taking the last load down to the yard waste vendor today, but we're well over 13,000 pounds of pumpkins. I'm thinking we're going to end up probably almost 15,000 pounds of pumpkins that have been collected and are going to be turned into compost, which is fantastic. I mean,
yeah,
that type of material, that amount of material would have generated a lot of methane in the landfill, and we're mm-hmm. able to keep that out of the environment. So we're really happy about that. It's just one of the many programs we do. Mm-hmm. It kind of, as Susan pointed out, we're not the dump. We're a place to take resources and recover what we can out of them and put them to beneficial reuse. And that's, we enjoy doing that. We enjoy making sure that things are handled properly, whether it be household hazardous materials or the organics. So the food waste diversion program has been going extremely well.
Yeah. Hey, Bill, that's a great segue into the fact that the Resource Recovery Plant celebrates 45 years this year, but also at our recent city council meeting, both Mary Rankin and Bill Schmidt had requests for proposals approved and moved forward by the city council for some major, major plans to, one, look at waste to energy in our community and its future, and two, look at a climate action plan for the community. And I was hoping that we could get both of Mary and Bill to talk about those plans. Maybe get Mary first for a few minutes, and then Bill could talk about the future of waste to energy.
Super.
Yes, I'm happy to do that. Well, I think it would be hard for most people not to be interacting in our current society without hearing about our greenhouse gas emissions, climate impact, all the many things that we're really watching as a world, not just a community. And the city has been, I think, very thoughtful and proactive in this consideration, city council. And first of all, we just completed a greenhouse gas inventory to really get a benchmark of where we are in the community. And I know we talked about that at quite length on a couple of shows, but that involved both looking at not only our current greenhouse gas inventory, but also considering where we have potentials to increase renewable energy, particularly solar. And then we also did a climate vulnerability study to make sure that we understood, as we continue to move forward, what sort of impacts climate changes and climate action can have on our community. What these climatic events that we've been seeing more and more of, how those impact different areas of our community, who is at risk, and how can we look at mitigating, and how can we look at incorporating, you know, adaptation strategies. And so our climate action plan will incorporate all of those pieces that we hired consultants to study and give us feedback on, and really look at two things. First of all, goal setting. You know, where are the goals that make the most sense for our community? How can we certainly challenge ourselves and be very considerate of our needs? And then secondly, putting those goals into a climate action plan that puts forth milestones, puts forth strategies, and most importantly, engages feedback and consideration and input from our entire community. It's a big piece of this process that we are putting forward, is to have that real robust and real well-represented input from our community. And so this is, you know, we want this from all sectors. We want this from all of our citizens, really, no matter where you may sit on sort of, you know, climate considerations. We want to know the concerns that are out there. We want to know the questions that are out there, because eventually when we get this plan completed, which we're looking at it being an 18-month process by the time the contract gets awarded, when we have this final plan, we want it to be something that the community feels they have been a part of creating, and that they feel that ownership, and they feel that, you know, personal connection toward their own lives and within their own professions on how they can be a part of ensuring this climate plan moves forward, succeeds, and accomplishes what we all envision that it will.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Schmidt, waste energy, is that a bit more to your overall purview?
Sure. As Susan talked about, we've been doing this now for 45 years, the Resource Recovery Plant. Mm-hmm. And what we're looking at doing is trying to see if there's a better way or a good way of making sure that we handle our waste properly. So we have we'll be going out to find a consultant to review what we're doing, look at several other different options, and then have them propose ideas that may be beneficial and work for us here at the City of Ames. So we're really excited about having this move forward, getting some new information. There's been a lot of work done in Europe and Japan on waste energy, and want to make sure that we are stay on the forefront of that information and use the best technology possible We want to keep as much material out of the landfill as we can, and this is one way that we can keep going with.
And as a college student, I'm kind of dating myself, but I recall back in the 70s, 45 years ago, and the Ames Recovery Resource Plant was cutting edge at that time. And it's just, we're, if we didn't have people of your stature, we'd sure wish we did at this time. So kudos to all the people that have made the Ames Resource Recovery Plant such a success and growth now, growth potential for the future.
I think one of our values as an organization is continuous improvement. And I think it's important to look at the way that we continue to operate and look for ways to take advantage of what's out there and how can we take a great system and make it better.
Exactly. There's. It just seems like it's inherent with a lot of better ways. And you're all to be commended for those visions. Is there anything else?
I think we covered everything.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anyone has any questions, please feel free to give us a call, 515-239-5137. We get calls daily. People say, hey, I've got this. What do I do with it? And we love those calls.
Okay.
Because we want to make sure people take care of things properly.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Mr. Bill Schmidt, well, the Resource Recovery Superintendent, Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director for Iowa State University in the City of Ames, and Susan Guiazda, as always, have a good weekend. And thanks.
You too.
Thanks for all you do for the City of Ames. Yeah. Anna Banana, are you in the house?
I am in the house. And I want to give a heart-to-heart message to Mucci and Foster, who the listeners can't see, but they are a perfect addition to the local talk team. So that is 2020 with Zoom. So we see all sorts of pets make appearances. So thank you, Michael Metz, for providing a furry part of Local Talk this morning.
You're welcome.
So today's heart-to-heart message, though, the serious one, is from Carol Pluckrose, who shares a poem with us every week. And her poem today is The Wreck of the Hesperus by Longfellow. She picked it because it was sparked in a lighthearted way by a friend of mine complaining about how long and unruly his hair had become since not being able to get it cut due to lockdown. I called him the wreck of the Hesperus, a phrase my dad often used to say when I was a child. At the time, I had no idea of its genesis. My friend didn't know what I meant, but got the general gist. This made me look out to the poem and thought I would share it today. It is timely, too, as it speaks of the sailor's arrogance and pride and refusing to listen to the advice not to take the boat out in the storm. Needless to say, the sailor and his young daughter perished. So a cautionary tale with resonance today. And I think about the weather that's coming up as well. So it kind of goes with the theme of what's going to happen to us this week of slowing down and not combing my hair. So I could be known as the wreck of the Hesperus as well. So without further ado, here's The Wreck of the by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, brought to us by our Carol Pluckrose over in England. Mm-hmm. It was a schooner Hesperus that sailed the wintry sea, and the skipper had taken his little daughter to bear him company. Blue were her eyes as the fairy flax, her cheeks like the dawn of day, and her bosom white as the hawthorn buds that ope in the month of May. The skipper, he stood beside the helm, his pipe was in his mouth, and he watched how the veering flaw did blow, the snoke now west, now south. Then up and spake an old sailor had sailed to the Spanish main. I pray thee, put into yonder port, for I fear a hurricane. Last night the moon had a golden ring, and tonight no moon we see. The skipper, he blew a whiff from his pipe, and a scornful laugh laughed he. Colder and louder blew the wind, a gale from the northeast. The snow fell hissing in the brine, and the bellows frothed like yeast. Down came the storm and smote amain the vessel in its strength. She shuddered and paused like a frightened steed, then leaped her cable's length. Come hither, my little daughter, and do not tremble so, for I can weather the roughest gale that ever wind did blow. He wrapped her warm in a seaman's coat against the singing blast. He cut a rope from a broken spar and bound her to the mast. Oh, father, I hear the church bell rings. Oh, say, what may it be? 'Tis a fog bell on a rock-bound coast. He steered for the open sea.
Oh, Father, I hear the sound of guns. Oh, say, what may it be? Some ship in distress that cannot live in such an angry sea. Oh, Father, I see a gleaming light. Oh, say, what may it be? But the Father answered never a word. A frozen corpse was he. Lashed to the helm, all stiff and stark, with his face turned to the skies. The lantern gleamed through the gleaming snow on his fixed and glassy eyes. Then the maiden clasped her hands and prayed, as saved she might be, and she thought of Christ who stilled the wave on the Lake of Galilee. And fast through the midnight, dark and drear, through the whistling sleet and snow, like a sheeted ghost, the vessel swept towards the reef of Norman's Woe. And ever the fitful gust between, a sound came from the land. It was a sound of the trampling surf on the rocks and the hard sea sand. The breakers were right beneath her bows. She drifted a dreary wreck, and a whooping billow swept the crew like icicles from her deck. She struck where the white and flew sea waves looked soft as carded wool, but the cruel rocks that gored her side like the horns of an angry bull. Her rattling shrouds all sheathed in ice with the mast limp by the board. Like a vessel of glass she stove and sank. Ho, ho, the breakers roared. At daybreak on the bleak sea breach, a fisherman stood aghast to see the form of a maiden fair lashed close to a drifting mast. The salt sea was frozen on her breast, the salt tears in her eyes, and he saw her hair like the brown seaweed on the billows fall and rise. Such was the wreck of the Hesperus in the midnight and the snow. Christ save us from all from a death like this on the reef of Norman's Woe. Whoa, is that dark? But I guess that should definitely make us slow down when the snow falls. And what do you have to say about that, Mike Metz?
Well, that is just a bone-chilling story. I really enjoy sea stories, but I had a question for you, Anna.
All right.
Okay.
I have an answer.
Why are bananas never lonely? Kind of like our KHOI crew here this morning. Why are we never lonely?
Why are we never lonely related to bananas? Tell Anna Banana.
Because we hang around in munches.
Da, 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 da. Yeah. And that's a way to bring it from the dreary, cold poem that is that poem to a little bit of levity, which is great. That is KHOI. We go from whoa, watch out, to ha, ha, ha. Right, Pat?
Well, yeah, let's weave in something to look forward to after COVID. One of the auction items in the auction house at KHOIFM.org is being donated by the Briggs Woods Golf Course and Conference Center in Webster City. Now, this is something to look forward to, probably next summer. There's unparalleled 18-hole golfing experience. From the sloping open front nine to the wooded back nine, the greens are pristine and fair, but the pines can and will challenge your approach. The clubhouse has a tasty menu and a full bar, and pick up anything else you may need from the pro shop. There's also a brand new state-of-the-art conference center for all your meeting and wedding events. And boy, I know there's a backlash for a lot of meetings and wedding events. So you want to keep this Briggs Woods Golf Course and Conference Center in mind. And there is, after your visit to the Gridiron Grill and Sports Lounge, now that's a 2017 winner with the best pork tenderloin in Iowa. So I want everybody to look forward to this. Post-COVID, this excellent dining experience offers a comfortable and inviting atmosphere with fantastic food and great service. It'll be the perfect outing for you and your friends. So if you're feeling kind of down and blue in December at this Christmas time, you might want to go to the auction house and look at some items that will give you hope and resiliency for the future, Anna Banana.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to bid on that one.
Okay. So go to that KHOIFM.org and negotiate the auction button and look over all the items and consider your bidding. The auction wraps up December 17th, next Thursday. So, well, this local talk normally airs at 7 a.m. and at 5 p.m. on Fridays at KHOI 89.1 FM. And remember to support this station financially when you go to the website KHOIFM.org. And find that yellow donate button and look for that auction house items. And remember that you can hear this program online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Yes, KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. This program is engineered by Mike Murphy. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Local Talk producers Ursula Rudenberg and Lynn Carey. And thank you, Dennis Hart, for your Friday report. And thanks to our guests, Susan Benner, Susan Guiazda, Mary Rankin, and Bill Schmidt. And thank you, Mike Metz. And I've been your host, Pat Schlarbaum. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard were Lowell Levenger, Get Together. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. And as they say on the radio, stop in again next Friday because we'll see you again
on the radio.